Absurdist kaiju action and slapstick humor await us this week as we look at another monster movie that tries to poke fun at the big G. Will this American take on Farley Brothers style comedy make us laugh or make us wish we had skipped this movie? Find out with us this week. This is Kaiju vs. History, not Zilla.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your proctology joke, Miles. And joining me is a Notzillosaurus party until dawn, growing to giant size, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing?
Very good. Very good. Yes, insert weird subtitle joke here, Miles.
Oh, boy.
Lots of typewriter sound effect subtitles.
I wish we were doing this show like early enough so that I could caution folks to like, hey, I promise you, your kaiju parody is not nearly as funny as you think it is.
There's a lot of...
Because
I did not think there were so many kaiju comedies in general,
it,
you know?
It makes sense that most of them are really coming out within the last 10 to 15 years with the kind of the new golden age that's kind of solidified itself. But I wish that somebody, anybody with a single ounce of comedic talent would get involved with one of these movies. I hate to be a harbinger of how this episode's going to go, but I think one thing that we have personally found is that kaiju comedies, at least within the genre, are by and large not very funny or good.
Yeah, yeah, we've come to that here in season seven.
Especially within the last like month and a half, I feel like we've covered, what, at least three?
Yeah, they've been pretty prevalent in the 2010s. Yeah, we've had a lot of Japanese ones.
It is kind of funny that like no one outside, well, the Japanese, and like, I mean, our boy Kawasaki has done some decent work. And even that a lot of times is a little uneven. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think, has he gotten a 9 or even an 8 from us?
No.
Okay, I felt like maybe something might have popped, like crossed that line, but I wasn't sure, because I know I was pretty big on Outer Man, and we were both happy with Kaiju Mono, but both of those movies were pretty flawed. So,
sorry, can you move your microphone just a little bit closer? I'm having difficulty. It sounds like there's something going on outside
here. Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
I was like, where's this noise coming from? Yes, so not Zilla. You ready to dive into this movie, Miles? Ready to talk?
I am, but first, I need you to tell us Zilla. What's in a title?
Well, not Zilla, obviously. You got Godzilla, and then you take the God out, and you got Notzilla, Miles. It's not Godzilla, Notzilla.
Interesting. So that means it's not Godzilla. Am I being correct? Is that the funniness of the joke?
It's not Zilla.
It's not funny.
I don't know what I expected from this movie. It's one that I don't think that I previewed that much, and that's unlike me. I usually are vetting these movies pretty well, but I think I just looked at the poster and it looked kind of professionally done, and I thought it was originally a Japanese movie, to be honest, because there were so many other similar that I was vetting. So yeah, I didn't know what I was expecting. Not a lot to this title outside of that it is an American made film. So Notzilla is, I guess it is kind of funny that they took, they keep taking God out of the schools, but taking the God out of Godzilla, not on my watch. But it is funny because the director of this film is pretty darn religious. Most of the stuff on his blog, director and writer, Mitch Teemley, is mostly like youth pastory kind of anecdotes and things. I read a lot of his blog for this podcast.
Oh, great. Thank you for sparing me. So Notzilla had its world premiere at G-Fest 27, which we need to get ourselves to one of these days. I feel
You tell me about it. I actually met another kaiju fan out in the wild. I think I mentioned this to you, a barista who I was talking to about the podcast.
Okay, weren't they like, wearing like a, or weren't you wearing like a, I was wearing Gary shirt or something?
I was wearing my Rega shirt and they complimented it. And I was like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. I've never met anyone.
DVD or something? Like, why do you own a Rega shirt? That's my first question.
Well, I was like, I've never met anyone who knew it was not Godzilla on the shirt and it was actually another monster, let alone someone who
knew exactly what monster that was. Rega.
I was like, yeah, you know, we just got done at the time, I think, editing the third episode. I was like, yeah, or the third movie in the series, Rega versus King Oga. I was like, that one's not very good. I kind of liked the other two, but Rega versus Oga, yeah.
So you didn't quite answer my question. Did this come with the DVD from SRS, or did you actually order this shirt?
Oh, no, I ordered it separately. I actually really like the shirt, and mostly because SRS is getting professional artists to recreate and do posters for some of these movies. And I'm trying to think who did this poster, but I don't have it on the tip of my tongue. What's his name? Kaiju artist. Matt Frank has done a lot of them. I'm pretty sure he did this. I'm just Googling Rega art. Yeah, I think he did the cover of the DVD. But anyway, the barista enjoyed the shirt. And I was talking to him about it.
Well, thank you, barista, for, you know, enriching Patrick's life. I do want the Young Gary versus Pogasari shirt that we saw on.
Oh, my gosh.
I love that shirt.
That was the biggest contribution to the Kaiju podcast here, is knowing that shirt existed. I was like, awesome. Yeah,
I need to get that.
But yes, that is probably where you would find a shirt like that, is G-Fest. So maybe next year. I think that's a good goal for when we wrap up watching all the Kaiju movies ever.
Yeah, it would be the place to go for that. So yes, this movie appeared at G-Fest and then had its official like wide release on Amazon Prime in August 2020. And I mean, I know some of the stuff like the Rega movies, I do remember seeing those on Prime. At this point, I have probably started like kind of filtering movies like this out as white noise, because they just, again, like I said, a lot of these comedic kaiju films tend not to be A, good, or B, funny. And this one specifically, I mean, honestly, like Zillafoot, frankly, tries to attempt that kind of Zucker humor. And for those who aren't old enough to know what I'm talking about, this is a reference to the Zucker brothers, who did stuff like Airplane and The Naked Gun, and not the person who has helped ruin Western civilization with Meta. And the problem with doing that kind of humor is, especially that kind of humor, is if you do not have the right script, the right cast, and the right director to kind of walk that razor's edge, because even Airplane and The Naked Gun movies, I mean, in any other hands, could be a complete and utter disaster.
Yes.
But because you have, one, the team that did, like, you know, Airplane, and then, you know, Faust and the Police Squad, as well as Leslie Nielsen, who, it's so wild that he just got bored with doing drama and, like, comedy reawakened his like, excitement for acting, and that's what he did for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And, like, he's more known for his comedic acting that people, like, will watch his earlier stuff and be like, wait, he was a serious actor once upon a time?
Oh, he's so silly. He's just the silliest.
I'm a massive Leslie Nielsen fan. But unfortunately, there is not a Leslie Nielsen among the cast of Notzilla. So Patrick, let's start talking about old Notzilla. What's this whole thing about?
Well, first, a little bit of the history, and I found this very interesting. This project dates back to a script reading that Mitch Teamley had in 2010 at G-Fest. So this thing was like 10 years in the making. And originally it was a short script called Kraga. So not retitled until Notzilla until a little later. And I think the original idea was it was supposed to be a lost media movie, like a movie,
like a mockumentary.
No, that was filmed in the 50s, filmed in the
50s. Okay. And then so they're doing kind of those like Lost Skeleton of Kadabra, whatever it's called.
Yeah,
but something like that.
This one is more just like set, I guess. I don't know, it's hard to explain. This one is definitely like you said, much more Zucker Brothers. I think I said Farrelly Brothers in the intro, but
he did. You know,
I think Zucker is more the 70s.
It's more apt.
Farrelly's
humor is not really present here. Although I do like Stuck on You.
I was thinking of, yeah, Dumb and Dumber, that kind of goofy humor, but it is definitely a little more slapstick.
There's no Kingpin here.
But yeah, they had a script reading for this original script like a decade before its release. And supposedly, Mitch Timley had reached out to actors Patrick Warburton and George Takei to star in the film. I don't know if that like got past their agents or script readers or what, but there was a short teaser released in YouTube in 2011 for that project, which pretty much was scrapped and re-edited into what became Knotzilla. So 2018 is when the pre-production started on this version of the film, which is, you know, for the most part, a fairly simple giant monster kind of retelling. There's maybe a little bit of gremlins in there in that it starts out as a baby, and then if you feed it alcohol, it grows. But yeah, we get some really, I think, great actors in this film doing some super thin characters. The main, I would say the main character of the film is Dr. Shirley Ugest.
Yeah, and possibly
played by Tiffany Davis.
The best actor of the entire production.
She's very good. Yeah.
Which apparently she's done some like thriller work. There was apparently a series called Clever Girl that was really, really well received. I've not seen anything with her in it because I kind of peeked at her Instagram. It says she's done some voiceover work and the like, but I didn't see anything that like popped up.
Unfortunately, that's most of the actors. And I think it was filmed around where it took place. It was in St. Louis, right?
Yeah, and this is sadly, I think, the most recent thing she's done, which...
Cincinnati,
yeah.
Along the Ohio River.
Yeah, this is the most recent thing she's done that I can see, at least from IMDb.
Yeah, I just don't think these are, like, necessarily professional actors that were recruited for this, but... Or maybe that it just is another thing that they do. I think the main actor, Professor Hiro Honda, also is like, you know, a model or something along those lines. Because I don't think he has done much acting outside of this as well. But yeah, for whatever reason.
Oh, she just recently had a child. So that's probably why she hasn't been in much recently.
we have to remember that this was only 5 years ago now. It's so crazy how close we've sped up to catch up to the present. But yeah, a lot of these actors, I think, did a very good job in the movie with what they were given, but don't seem to be, you know, like, I guess movie actors. They seem plucked out of your local TV
theater.
Yeah, or local theater, local TV commercials, that kind of thing. They're very good actors.
Yeah, I mean,
but
I would definitely say I wouldn't put the fault on some of the main cast. I mean, they are doing clearly what they were asked to do. Although some don't do it as well as others. Like, I know that, like, Richard Blowhart, played by Tim Bench, like, I get what he's supposed to be. The problem is it's so poorly written that it also makes the actor look bad.
Oh yeah.
And that's the problem. And I think you're right that, like, as far as the main cast is concerned, it's not that they are bad, but the script is so poor that, like, it's hard for their personalities to kind of shine through how unfunny this script is.
Yeah, and we do have the writer-director Mitch Timley to thank for that. As someone who has dug into his blog way more than I should have for preparation of this episode, because, you know, he did write some filmmaking blogs, which I found very interesting. Unfortunately, not that many behind the scenes. There's some building of the Knotzilla suit and things like that, but not too much about the writing of the script. It, like I said, it seemed from his blog, he's a pretty religious man, but definitely still, you know, has that comedy that comes out of the 1970s and 80s, and that really translates to his script writing. But he seems like a pretty, I don't know, non-conservative religious, I guess is the nice way to say it. He seems like a little left of center for the most part, but definitely with some of his ideas, I think, about, like, you know, poking fun at how racist and or sexist the 50s and 60s were, the period that this film was written in. But in doing so, he himself has made a product that is, you know, doesn't poke hard enough fun at it.
Well, I think that's the problem is it certainly, like, shows, but it doesn't do it in a way that, like, feels self-aware. Like, self-aware in the, like, oh, the genre has these things, but there's no barb attached to that. It's just like, oh yes, it feels more like we are copying a 50s style movie in that we are inserting this sexism and this racism and these things, but we're not doing anything really about it.
So the reveal that Dr. Blowhart is, like, an idiot comes fairly late in the film. Like, he's obviously shown to be incompetent. No, it doesn't. But
it's from the beginning of the film. He's an idiot. Like,
confirmed that he's not a doctor, that he took on a doctor's, like, mantle, you know, but, like, the film takes a while, I think, really painting him as the actual bad guy, and they still let him off with, like, an aw shucks kind of ending.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is, like, this movie, I think it's afraid to say something almost. You know?
It's trying to be lighthearted comedy.
And I mean, understand. The thing is, this thing is fully aware. I mean, like, one of the heroes is Professor Hero Honda, which
they're just like, go real hard into the Japanese accent, making fun of the Japanese accent.
All right, so that aspect was rough to watch. But I did like the fact that he was named Hero Honda. I was like, okay, cool. That's nice. That's good. One of the few good choices this movie made.
Yeah, and as a character, you know, I actually liked him. He felt some guilt about his father and, like, the monster making. There's a little bit of, like, post-war Japan kind of in there, and then he's trying to travel to the United States with these monsters to raise them and not have, like, the government destroy them. And that's kind of part of the, I guess, moral of the story, is loving families can raise monsters up. I don't know. And the government is definitely not the most trustworthy source when it's run by people like Dick Blowhart. But yeah, there's a bunch of side characters that, boy howdy, Dr. Jacques Boutet, she's an actual French woman, I think, is revealed. I thought she was just putting on an accent.
It's actually the one decent joke in the entire movie. Well, is, like,
she's pretending to be a man so she can have this physicist job.
Yeah. It's very theatrical. And I mean, like, the theater, like, this feels like if this was a play, this would work a lot better. Mm-hmm. Because it's clearly low budget, and it's clearly, like, a gag. Like, the entire time, most people, the whole thing is a joke that, like, oh, everyone finds her attractive, but they don't want to say, oh, it's just because he's French. And I got to give credit to Becca Kravitz, who was very, very fun in this role, and actually, like, recently was in, like, a real movie. She was in Shirley, which is about Shirley Chisholm, the Democratic presidential nominee in 72, the first, like, black congresswoman. She's in that movie, like, starring Regina King, like, but not a big part, but she's in it. So it's like, okay, she's got a legitimate acting credit after this movie.
I will say I loved the character, even though there's not, like, a ton. It's just a lot of funny little jokes of Pearl Stringer, who was a waitress / news reporter who's, like, constantly getting the scoop because she keeps dressing up like different people.
I liked Samantha Russell, who played her. I thought she was great.
Seems like someone that should have, like, a ton of work.
She does, actually. She's worked quite a bit since. She's got at least, like, 10 credits since that movie. So yeah,
she was in a very small role, it looks like, but the Netflix White Noise movie.
And was also in Shirley. So I guess it must have filmed in the area or something.
I can tell you that. I bet I can tell you that via IMDb.
But I thought that some of her stuff was very funny. I thought the idea was clever initially, but that joke becomes stale very quickly. They have nothing to do with it. And it's too bad, because I did think Samantha Russell was fantastic.
Yeah, there's a very funny joke. And it's like, they probably you know, this is a black woman saying this, they probably wouldn't hire me because I'm a woman or the other thing. And she's like, the other thing? It's like, yeah, I'm from New Jersey. It's like, okay, yeah. that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that line was okay.
Shirley did indeed was filmed in Cincinnati. Ohio. So I think awesome. You got it there. But yeah, there's some other characters. There's another African-American doctor who's pretending to be Swedish. And it's like, all right, there's just like one too many of these jokes.
Of this joke. Yeah.
Dr. Bjorn Block. And it's like, oh boy.
Yeah. I fully agree with that. And that's a huge problem with this movie is like there are some not awful ideas. Like that is one thing I can say about this movie is like the idea of a kaiju parody that kind of riffs on 50s cinema, not unlike the Attack of the 50 Foot Woman remake, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think maybe if they'd done a little bit more of that kind of style, it might have helped a little bit. Where it's kind of bookended by this idea that you're watching something. I don't know. A lot of the comedy just falls completely flat for me. And some of it is actively, I think, antithetical to what they're wanting to do. Because some of the stuff does come off as sexist and racist. And the whole point was for it to highlight that aspect of some of these movies. And they accidentally just made a sexist or racist joke.
Yeah, they just didn't, like I said, didn't go in hard enough. And it's like, it's totally fine to like, not go hard if you're just touching on those kind of things, if they're like one-off jokes, but it's like the main character's arc, you know, is like overcoming sexism of her boss and in the workplace kind of. It's like, okay, well then you have to go in on it a little harder if it's the main plot of your main character.
Yeah, and I mean it's almost as if like you gave, you know, someone like if you gave the Zillafoot crew money. This is what it kind of feels like, to be honest. I'm
comparing it to Zillafoot. It's so much.
I'm sorry. It might be better than Zillafoot, but not by much. So
I mean, it has a story that you can follow, like A to B.
I mean, so does Zillafoot. And
I will say, a pretty well designed monster suit. I mean, it's not reinventing the wheel or anything, but I was impressed by the skull, just like a foam sculpt, but it has some good work done in the facial features. I didn't like the spines on its back, which were like,
I don't think we were supposed to really see the spines on its back, to be honest.
Well, there's a couple of scenes where it's like spinning around and stuff, but it's like cutouts of foam, and it's like one continuous piece. I mean, you can find pictures of it online. It's not good, but I did enjoy that they're, you know, making a brand new suit, putting it together, putting a good amount of money into it there. Did you have a favorite scene in the movie, Miles? Something that did tickle your fancy?
I'm trying to look at what I've...
Beyond Zucker Brothers comedy, it was also like Looney Tunes style.
Yeah, there was some of that. Also, the guy who plays Dr. Blowhard, he feels so like Glenn Howerton coded, but like we have Glenn Howerton at your grandma's.
Yeah, at your grandma's church. They have like a really funny actor in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I gotta say, did I have a favorite part? Actually, you know what? I liked the mirror gag.
Yes.
Especially when Hassan pops up in Hero's Dr. Father.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bit was actually pretty good. And yeah. Again, I mean, it showcases that the actors are not the problem. The script is really the problem with this movie. Even like the low budget aspect of it, like I do enjoy, like, okay, they are really trying to like replicate what they were doing in the 50s with some of the models, and even kind of getting super meta with like, oh, we're just going to cut the strings from these planes and smash them. Like, yeah, there were some side gags that were kind of funny, but like in a better film they would have been all right.
So
what about you? Did you have a favorite part?
The thing is, I think like so much of this movie probably killed at its target audience at G-Fest. You know, if you went to a screening of this, I think the older Godzilla fans would definitely enjoy this movie a good deal. I enjoyed a lot of the main character, Dr. Shirley Jess. I think she was great. She had a very funny moment where she actually interacted with the subtitles in the film, like they were being typed out.
Yeah, I know you really liked that gag a lot.
It was funny. I did not expect it. It did get a chuckle out of me, but it was like a kind of chuckle. It was not like a full-on guffaw. But the thing I told you is, like, I don't think any of these kaiju parodies work to be a actual funny movie. They work to be a okay kaiju movie, you know? But I think this one was probably the closest, and maybe just because I wasn't expecting it to be very good. I was pleasantly surprised it wasn't terrible. I will say, the most interesting thing about this film is there was a Kickstarter for the comic book adaptation of the film, which was done by creator Ben Dunn, a 56 page full color graphic novel, which you can buy because it succeeded. And yeah, you can also see pages of it online. So it's hilarious to me in a world where there's, like, you know, very few comic book adaptations of some kaiju movies that this one got one, and it actually doesn't look bad. It looks like an okay comic, but it was also, like, I think a few years after the film came out. It's like it seemed like pretty past like the interest of it, but maybe it was, you know, for streaming purposes, kind of getting the word out about it. I found that very interesting, Miles, that it has a comic book adaptation, not anything in the way of sequels or really other legacy elements of this film. I think the director has talked about doing some more, but I don't know if that was just G-Fest kind of talk.
Right.
But I can imagine this being shown at G-Fest each year.
I will not be in attendance of that showing.
No way. It is. Oh, if there was like a Q&A segment, definitely. We're absolutely not.
I have the opposite of interest in that.
Yeah, not a amazing rating out there for this film. It has about 5 stars on IMDb. I don't think it has. Well, it has Rotten Tomato ratings. I don't think it has critic ratings to put it over, but a 62% on Rotten Tomatoes. Miles, where are you thinking for its your personal enjoyment of this film? Where do you land?
I'm looking at your score that you put on the notes already, and
this is your vote.
I know, and we are not on the same page here. I found this actively unfunny, and the problem with watching a comedy that's not funny is it just makes it such a slog. I will say because I don't know how much, I know you mentioned the fins, but I did like the suit for a different movie. It did feel very Zucker-esque and like, oh yeah, this is what a parody of Godzilla would look like to this audience. That for like, but they would use it for a shot. Like it would have been in like one scene for a Godzilla joke, kind of like in Austin Powers where it's like,
yeah, it's a legally distinct.
It looks like Godzilla
monster.
It's not, and I thought that was very, very funny in that movie. But like here, yeah, very little of it works for me. This is not a movie that I ever want to revisit. I was pretty consistently, and it's a very short runtime. I was checking the time throughout. So yeah, I really did not like this movie at all. I did not enjoy it, despite the nice things I have to say about some of the cast. This is a 3 for me.
An hour and 18 minutes flew by in the blink of an eye. I feel like this is in tone probably the closest to a Minoru Kawasaki film. A very silly, very fun, light look at kaiju films or kaiju tokusatsu kind of culture. The fact that this is an American one does make it a little unique. There's just not that many made in America. But yeah, this is an indie production. And while not amazing, not great in any way, shape, or form, I had a lot of fun with it. And like I said, maybe because I was a little surprised. The comedy, very corny, but good in what it was trying to do, I guess. Not good comedy, but good for the type of comedy I was going for. I would watch this again. So I'm putting it in the good category, like 6 or 7. And I'm going with 7. And for the technical, I'm also giving it a 7. Mostly I'm knocking off a whole bunch of points because I realized how racist the film was about a quarter, halfway through. Humor, it definitely feels like a movie that was made in the 80s about the 50s. And when you realize that Mitch Teamley, the director writer, is like 7 years old himself, it makes sense. You know, it's an old white guy's kind of POV. But
that does not forgive anything.
It's so weird because it doesn't. I mean, he is like in the window as a cameo in the film, but it's not like a vanity project. It feels like something that is professionally put together. While not a great script, it has great actors in it that do themselves get into.
I think you're abusing the word great.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think for all the kaiju comedies that we've watched, this has got the best acting. But yeah, the one technical thing I was really impressed with is the use of rear projection in the film instead of just green screening. They actually used, they were like filming in front of a movie screen that was projecting like the monster in the background kind of thing. So I'm adding an entire point to its technical score for that part of the production itself. It's a great throwback. It made it look like the movies from the 50s. I loved it. And yeah, had a classic feel that I was not expecting with so many practical filmmaking elements in 2019. So yeah, another 7 out of 10 for me. Miles, what about you?
Yeah, so the technical aspect, I mean, the biggest problem I had obviously was with the script. Mm-hmm. The adequate enough acting is passable, but this script tanks the movie. Because again, when you have a comedy movie that is not funny, like it fails on like completely. And so no matter what other aspects are okay about it, like the movie is still a massive failure. So here's where the script like really, really matters. Mm-hmm. Because some of the special effects, I know were done tongue in cheek, but still not because of the script, like it makes them look worse. So while it's certainly higher than my enjoyment, but not by much, I gave it a 4.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's not a complete failure, Miles, of a comedy script, because you said you laughed one time, so
that is still a failure. If you got one question right out of 10, did you pass that test?
No, but no, I didn't say pass. I said it's not a complete failure.
And that is a complete failure.
As far as its importance as a kaiju movie, I think, you know, the folks making this movie, Mitch Teamley, do themselves love kaiju. I think this, for me, is kind of close to the top or middle pile of kaiju parody films. We have had some very good ones in the 2010s, which does knock this down a little bit. But like I said, how many have we watched? Probably like 7 or 8 in this podcast in total.
Least.
And it is knocked down because of the fact that the last few or some of the last few I have really enjoyed. I'm trying to. Kaiju Mono, we gave
Kaiju Mono was
the best score that any of these have gotten, which was an 8 out of 10.
Kaiju Mono and Outer Man both were highlights.
Outer Man is the other one. Outer Man was another 8. So this one is definitely down from those. I think while this movie suffers a good deal because of how many kind of categories it's trying to look at, which is like 1950s kind of politics, the kaiju aspect, it's comedy, whereas, you know, Kaiju Mono is just, let's put wrestlers in wrestling a big monster, you know, that kind of thing. This definitely suffered in some aspects there. And it's also, it's not really a full kaiju parody. It's just kind of like a monster movie parody for the most part. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for its importance. Like I said, mostly because if those other two movies didn't exist, like this would be the best kaiju parody, but it's like, it is obviously not because we have some other things to compare to. But what about you, Miles? Where's it rank on its importance factor? A 5 out of 10, mind you, is moderately insightful on our scale.
Oh, okay. Then that makes me feel pretty good about what I gave it. In terms of its relevance to the genre and what it has to say about kaiju film as a whole, and its contribution to the genre, I am going to give it a 2. I think it's pretty antithetical. I think movies like this, or like the Zillafoots, and honestly, I feel like a lot of these Western like kaiju nerds, like it's clear that like they at least enjoy monster movies or kaiju films. Like that aspect is crystal clear, and they paste that over their movie. What they fail to make is a good movie or even a decent movie. Like these movies, like, and this is where you have to kind of get a little tough love about it, because like there's one thing for a film to be like low budget and still have heart and soul. Like there are plenty of them out there. I mean, there are movies that were done in that have been on MST3K that are still like competent movies. Like I feel like this is the whole point of using it for the movie, but this Island Earth is a good science fiction film. It's mm-hmm. a low budget science fiction film, but it's a good science fiction film. That is not the case with, you know, You're Not Zillas, and heck, even Colossal kind of fails at this sort of thing. And I mean, it's something that you and I have talked about. Kaiju parody is really tough. No one's really hit a home run with it yet.
Those last two that we just mentioned, I think
those are really, really solid movies, but we had problems mm-hmm. with both of them.
Yeah. And not perfect for sure.
And so I feel like no one's really hit a home run with the kaiju parody yet. I'm waiting for someone like really competent to do that. And it just really, it hasn't happened yet. That said, this is not something that like if I'm having a conversation with someone and they're asking about certain kaiju movies that they may have missed, some deep cuts, this is not going to come up. Like, is it a deep cut? Sure, but for a reason. And yeah, for me, like nothing about this is leading me to recommend it to another human being. I am sure you feel different, buddy. So you tell me how, like,
it's fine. I mean, that's why we this is not a single person podcast. I like tempering both of our reviews. That puts you at a 2 on that part of the scale is shameful for kind of where it sits in the art of Kaiju Eiga. Brings your podcast or your score, Miles's score, to a 3 out of 10, and I'm at a 6.3 out of 10. Averaging those together, our podcast final is a 5 out of 10, which is actually kind of in the middle of the kaiju comedy or kaiju parody world. Death Kappa, we gave a bit of a higher score, 6 out of 10. What else have we done recently? I guess Love and Peace, we gave a pretty high score to. That's kind of comedy. It's just more weird. But yeah, we've had so many good ones recently. So it is hard. I don't know if do you consider Craw the Sea Monster a comedy?
No,
it's kind of comedic, but not on.
No, it was just bad.
Yeah, we don't have a separate side list for comedies, but yeah, there have been a whole bunch in recent years, and believe it or not, we have even more still this season. So yeah, 5 out of 10 for Not Zilla. Folks can find us online. If you just put in Google Kaiju versus History, you're going to find us. But we're talking about Blue Sky. We're talking about emailing us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. We are talking about finding our Letterboxd reviews, where you can see we rate things on a 10-point scale, 10-star scale. Letterboxd is 5 stars. So this movie would be 2.5 stars on there. That's pretty easy math. You'll figure it out once you look at Letterboxd. And if you go on to the Cosmic Crit Discord, another podcast that we're on, we're talking about kaiju movies in there. The big news from this week, and this happened months ago, but was we got the teaser for Godzilla X Kong 3 Supernova. Miles, pretty heavily showing their hand that's going to be some kind of space monster, you know?
Well, that and the bright light in the middle of Supernova makes me think Gigan. So I'm very potentially excited about. I mean, I'm gonna enjoy another GXK movie anyway.
Can you imagine if it is neither Gigan nor Space Godzilla, and it's just some original legendary monster?
I mean, so long as it's good, they haven't really like wowed me with some of the originals that they put front and center outside of like in the New Empire. There were some neat looking creatures. But I mean, the thing is like we need characters and, you know, the Scar King was, I mean, good. Yeah, I mean, he's
a good character.
I don't want another ape, but like, you know, that's just my personal preference. I thought he was still a good villain, but like, I think we need another character. So like, at least it introduced like maybe some zillions or something.
I think it's got to be a Godzilla enemy, not like a classic one, but like obviously Scar King was King Kong's enemy.
We definitely need to kind of veer towards a little more Godzilla focus for sure.
Yes. Right. So that is going to do it for Godzilla. What is happening next week, Miles?
Sorry, I just put that down.
You have no clue, huh?
No, I do now. Thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next time when we visit China for a throwback adventure and kaiju film that seemingly came out of nowhere with a title that feels like it should be an asylum film. That's right. Tune in next week for History versus Snow Monster versus Ice Shark.